Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Let's dive right in today with the Dakota Political Junkies. This week, we've got Denise Ross with us. Welcome, Denise. And I'm talking to Denise. Can she hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. How about John Hunter? Do we have him as well?
I'm on also.
All right, we got some phone issues going on, but I think we've got it worked out. So let's start, Denise, with you, and let's talk about Chantel Krebs and Dusty Johnson. Big announcement about running for South Dakota's only seat in the House of Representatives. Expected news for you. Did you see that coming?
Yeah, I had heard that she was seriously considering it and expected to announce after the legislative session was done. But she'd walked up to the line before when she was in the legislature and then ultimately not announced. So there was a small amount of surprise there. But we're going to have a competitive primary for the House seat. Dusty's been around a long time. He was on the Public Utilities Commission, ran, I think he was in his 20s, ran just a very competitive race going all over the state, introducing himself to to folks, the retail politics that really works in South Dakota. So a lot of people know Dusty and have known him for a long time. Then he ended up serving as Governor Dugard's chief of staff for, I think it was 6 years. So he's been around here quite a long time and knows a lot of folks. Chantel has a similar story. I should have looked, but I'm not sure how long she was in the legislature, but for several terms. And then she's been Secretary of State. And she's a very impressive individual. I heard her give a presentation out here in Rapid City about 6 months ago, and I thought, boy, if she does run, Dusty, who I've known for a long time and is sort of a pal of mine because I covered him for so long, I really thought, boy, he's going to have a real race on his hands. And so he's got a head start. He announced shortly after the November election. He started raising money. He's been out there campaigning, doing what he does, going around the state, meeting with people, not making a lot of headlines, but doing a lot of work. And I expect that Chantel will work equally as hard. And so this is going to be, a lot of Republicans have already expressed, I've heard, not sure who they're going to vote for because these are both two very impressive individuals.
All right, John Hunter, what are your thoughts on this? What do you make of Chantel entering the race?
Well, I agree with Denise. They're both very capable candidates. They'd both be very good. And I was not surprised at Chantel's. I remember talking to her during the legislative session, and then she all but kind of implied that was going to happen. So, it'll be a very competitive race, and you may have heard that Dusty actually issued a statement, said, usually candidates bash each other, but not me and not now. Chantel's a friend, and, looking forward to that. So what I think will be interesting, however, is how they differentiate themselves when they are campaigning, because in many senses they're alike. They're both capable, honest people. So the question is what characteristics are going to be those that cause voters to say, I'm going to choose one over the other? And we don't know that. They're both Republicans. Haven't heard of any Democratic candidates. So I just find that I think the campaign will be interesting.
So when we say they're both Republicans, John, it just seems like more and more, as I talk to lawmakers from peer, that, casts a pretty broad net. So are they both Republicans sort of on the same spectrum of fiscal conservatism, social conservatism, or are there distinctions within there that we're going to learn more about?
Well, first, I think that at least in the state legislature, as far as you kind of, traditional Republicans and then kind of the far-right Republicans, some, once known as Tea Party kind of people, and neither Dusty nor Chantel are kind of part of that crowd, but they still espouse most of the conservative values that the party does overall and that, that Dennis Dugard does and so on. So I would say they're more similar than they are different, but neither of them are part of this kind of the kind of the Tea Party branch that wants to be even more conservative, and so they're pretty close.
All right, Denise, what do you think? How can they distinguish themselves? You got any advice?
That's an excellent question. I'm not in the business of dispensing advice to politicians,
right?
Except to always talk to reporters and answer our questions. But they are. John's exactly right. Neither one of them are part of this. How far right can we go? Crowd to just. who are really just wed to this idea of being as far to the right as they can go. They're both pretty pragmatic. They're both pretty deferential to and respect other points of view. And so I'm just not sure. If you watch Chantel during the legislative session, she brought forth bills that I think were part of this plan to roll out a congressional campaign to, so that she could say, and I think she probably was sincere in bringing these as well, you know, I tried to do these types of reforms, election-type reforms, campaign finance-type reforms that the Secretary of State has purview over. So she kind of has some of those campaign issues. Dusty has his long record of service, understands public utilities very well, which includes wind energy development. He served in the governor's office. That covers it all. As the chief of staff, you know, he's had the full view from that perch and pier. So I think they both got good resumes, good temperaments as candidates. I think it's going to be a very interesting race, and I sure hope it doesn't get nasty. It will be competitive. Republicans have a real choice here.
John Hunter, I'm crossing my fingers when Denise says that. I'm like, oh, please don't get nasty. I like the way Dusty Johnson sort of started out, because I do. I want a good old-fashioned primary that's based on issues between, like you said, two capable and honest candidates. Is that too much to ask for?
No, I don't think so. In fact, I think there's certainly some voters who would also appreciate that and would be very valuable in that thing. One thing about this is, though, at least recently, Chantel has been more visible. The Secretary of State's position is and can be a very visible, and she's done an excellent job of kind of putting that office in the condition that it is, and as Denise mentioned, passing these reforms. So at the moment, she kind of has a little bit more, I would say, of a track record. You know, most South Dakotans don't kind of follow the PUC, actions regularly. If there's something controversial that comes up, like Dakota Access, then you might see that, but in this case, you wouldn't. And being part of the governor's staff, that Dusty was, he was certainly on the, you know, kind of the inside, and that would be the relationship between the governor and the legislature. So certainly, but when I say that, you know, meaning, again, he understands the issues very, very fully, but he was not kind of out in front of that. He would not be the face of that. So I think what it will involve, at least at the beginning, would be kind of introducing Dusty a little bit more, because he hasn't had the public exposure recently that Chantel has.
Let's talk about that governor's race now, 2018, and what do we know, Denise, that we didn't know already? Is that just nothing new there?
Yeah.
But
well, not a lot, but you know, that was sort of the race to watch. Now we've got two in the Republican side, two competitive primaries. The governor has current Congresswoman Kristi Noem, who Chantel and Dusty are running to replace, versus Attorney General Marty Jackley. I'm giving Noem the edge right now. I've got two young kids, so I get to talk to other families who aren't in this political bubble that some of us live in right. Our professional lives. And she's got better name ID. She's run competitive races before, where Marty really hasn't had the kind of stiff competition that Kristi faced to get into Congress against Stephanie Herseth in the first place.
Sure.
And so I think it's sort of her race to lose, but I haven't talked, you know, then you have to look at who votes in Republican primaries, and that's a piece that I don't have a good handle on, is where is that sort of Republican base? Who are they sort of feeling like they want to align with? And so that's going to be a really interesting race to watch develop. You've got Marty Jackley doing the gear up case, trying to generate headlines from that. We had the EB-5 settlement that was announced yesterday. He's been trying to make some hay out of that, although that announcement yesterday came out of the governor's office. So it's not immediately clear to me how much involvement the attorney general's office had with that.
All right, before
settlement.
Before we get on to EB-5, and I do want to just quickly cover that and then talk about Initiative Measure 22 and Governor Dugard's thoughts on that. Just, John Hunter, what about Lieutenant Governor Matt Michaels? Has he said anything yet about his intentions?
I'm not aware of it, and he certainly would be very capable also. I mean, there are plenty of good candidates here, but I have not heard anything, and I may not be on the inside on that, but he would be a very capable candidate.
All right, very quickly, EB-5, I think Denise already laid that out. Is that wrapping things up, Denise, or do you think there's a lot more to come?
What happened yesterday was.
I love asking Denise Ross about EB5. By the way, John, do you see how I did that? What do you think, Denise? Is this
I
done?
I had to go back to my EB5 archive this morning and refresh my memory, right. And then it all comes flooding back, and it is a multi-headed monster.
But it all goes
back to this individual, Yoke Bolin of Aberdeen, who is. So the lawsuit settlement yesterday, and there's still another lawsuit out there from some investors in the Northern Beef plant in Aberdeen who basically claimed they got swindled out of their money, that the investment was oversold to them. But what happened yesterday was the state of South Dakota had sued this company that Yoke Bolin had created while he was still a state employee. This was the piece of it where he had signed a contract with himself.
Right.
So as a state employee, he signed the state side. As the individual who created this private company, he signed the private company side, then went on to generate the estimates, I believe, are north of $120 million. And the settlement yesterday was for $1.5 million, which sounds like a lot of money until you compare it to the estimated revenue that was generated based on the publicly available documents that we have. And then I went and looked. It's a company that's still in good standing with the Secretary of State. They're continuing to file annual reports. So they still appear to be active in some way. They have a website that's active. If you are an investor, you can do a secure login. And it appears as though they are still posting documents, financial documents from 2016, including, if you followed this story, you know about these loan pools.
Right.
So the most recent documents that appear to have been posted, and again, unless you're logged in, you can see the headline, but you can't click on it. And I don't have a secure, Yoke hasn't sent me my login information yet. These loan pools are sort of at the root of if I remember this correctly, the disagreement between the state and South Dakota Regional Center Incorporated, the name of this company, because they had taken some money that was supposed to have gone to the state in case of any lawsuits that were generated, i.e. the Chinese people suing now over Northern Beef, to cover the state's legal bills, and they had diverted some of that money, and so some of this is related to that. There was another lawsuit out of California where Mr. Bolin attempted to represent himself. He's not a lawyer, and it should have been the state of South Dakota should have been the one taking that on. So some of the money recovered is supposed to have covered some of the fallout from that, the legal fallout from that mess. And so, as I said, it's a multi-headed monster. Yesterday was a small piece, and I think there's still a real question over how the South Dakota taxpayers fared in all of this. When you still have an active company, appears to still be generating revenue because they signed agreements with all these investors where their investors have to pay $10,000 a year, $30,000 a year, depending on what's going on, and there's dozens and dozens of investors. So I really wish we had a full trial because we would have gotten a lot more information about exactly what's going on with this private company.
Right. John Hunter, South Dakota Regional Center, and I don't want to make light of it, but that's just one of those titles that sounds fishy to me anyway as a company. It's so general and vague.
Yeah.
So is that the problem that we're facing here, is that some of this stuff did not go to court? And then let's tie that into the conversation about initiated Measure 22 not going to court. Will we have gotten answers there that would have been useful to South Dakota voters?
That's a good question. That multi-headed is the phrase that Denise used, and of course, IM22 has a lot of different facets to it. They're a bit unique in the fact that the voters initiated something, passed it, and then the legislature repeals it. So the idea is to repeal and replace it and put in something good that's as effective, maybe better written. Governor Dugard, of course, insisted that the original one as passed, IM-22, was not constitutional, and the courts kind of temporarily agreed with that, at least, saying, well, let's put it on hold and see how this works out. And then, as it turns out, the legislature repealed it, so that was a kind of a moot point. And then, and to your point, Lori, then is we won't get a trial or won't get to defend that law as it is because it's already gone. Now, then the question becomes: does the series of bills? And I think there were 11 of them or something that attempted to put in place the will of the people, but worded differently. Are those an adequate replacement? Mm-hmm. And of course, that's where it splits into two political camps. If you have an R behind your name, then it says yes, it's perfectly capable, maybe even better if you have a D behind your name, and you say, no, it's not what we wanted, and so forth. So if you can strip that away, it's probably a pretty good set of reforms, not perfect. It's still, you know, when you go through the legislative meat grinder, you don't know what you get. You get sausage, and it's not always right. Perfect. Nevertheless, I think it was an attempt to try to put in a lot of that. And there's no reason to say you can't make further improvements in future years, right? And you know, all this, you know, if there aren't scandals that come up, people will say this works. Or if scandals do come up and they're addressed effectively, they'll say it works. If we get something that happens again that doesn't get fixed, then they'll say it was a failure.
So, John, I'm wondering if it's, and I'm reading Governor Dugard's column about upholding the promise to voters. Why do we need a summer session then? If they feel like the work has been done. Do you know what I'm asking?
Yeah, no.
Okay,
I wasn't aware.
Maybe it's a vague
summer session. So
I've been hearing that. Denise, have you been hearing that, that they'll continue to talk about this during a summer session?
A summer study? Is that what
study, thank you. That's what I meant. Wrong word.
Yeah, session would be calling the whole legislature
okay,
back.
Yeah.
A summer study.
Sorry, John.
Those are sort of famous for gathering a lot of testimony, generating a lot of information, and that goes into a binder and sits on a shelf and never really materializes.
I'm learning.
We may end up with more information, and it's interesting to me that they feel like the conversation isn't concluded, which maybe they're feeling a little bit of guilt about overturning the will of the voters. I'm not sure.
Or pressure.
Maybe
feel
like they need to keep this open a little bit. I agree with what John said. The proof in all of this will be as we go forward. I do think the tragedy is that they just so quickly overturned the will of the voters. And we're almost offended and affronted at the fact that the voters were seeking these reforms. We do have something better than we had before the last election, but how we got here, I think it's something that we'll have to really reflect on.
All right, an ongoing conversation. Thanks for summer study, Denise. I appreciate that. Denise Ross, political junkie, Rapid City, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
John Hunter, publisher of the Madison, Daily Leader.
Yeah, I got the music again, though, Lori. That's
all right. It's your special music, John Hunter.
We're going to feel good about it.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.